The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dorothy Gundy and John Russell. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, the U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday established limits on the federal government's power to reduce carbon emissions from power plants. The ruling immediately affects President Joe Biden's plans to deal with climate change by cutting the release of carbon gases into the atmosphere. It also raises new legal questions about government agencies' power to set rules and regulations. Scientists say greenhouse gases, such as carbon dioxide, trap heat and cause the atmosphere to warm. The court's 6-3 ruling restricted the Environmental Protection Agency's power to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from existing coal and gas-fueled electricity plants under the Clean Air Act anti-pollution law. The court's 6 conservatives were in the majority decision, with the 3 liberals disagreeing. With Thursday's ruling, the High Court overturned a lower court decision in 2021 that had struck down former President Donald Trump's Affordable Clean Energy Rule. That regulation, which the Biden administration has said it does not want to keep, would set limits on the EPA's power to regulate emissions from existing power plants. The Biden administration aims to cut the nation's greenhouse gas emissions in half by the end of 2030. It says it wants to have an emissions-free power industry by 2035. Power plants produce about 30% of carbon dioxide released in the U.S. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority opinion for the court. He wrote that the Clean Air Act does not give the EPA the power to place limits on emissions in the way it proposed. He said Congress must speak clearly on this subject. A decision of such magnitude and consequence rests with Congress itself, or an agency acting pursuant to a clear delegation from that representative body, he wrote. Conservative activists have long supported measures to reduce agency power in what some called a war on the administrative state. They want lawmakers in Congress to authorize action on issues of broad importance and societal impact. In January, the conservative justices also blocked the Biden administration's vaccine policy for large businesses meant to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. In her dissent, Justice Elena Kagan said the majority's decision takes away the power that Congress gave the agency to deal with the most pressing environmental challenge of our time. Kagan added that the majority has a clear goal: prevent agencies from doing important work, even though that is what Congress directed. The justices heard arguments in the case on February 28th. That was the same day that a United Nations report warned that the effects of climate change are about to get much worse. It said, the warming of the Earth would likely make people sicker and hungrier in the coming years. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat, criticized the court's ruling. He called it dangerously misguided and abhorrent. Schumer said, like the court's ruling on guns and abortions, Thursday's decision will cause more needless deaths, in this instance because of more pollution that will exacerbate the climate crisis and make our air and water less clean and safe. Senator Kevin Cramer, a Republican, praised the decision. He said the ruling restates that Congress never intended the federal government to regulate greenhouse gas emissions for the states. The decision was issued on the final day of rulings for the court's current term.
In April, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said India was ready to increase exports of wheat to feed the world. The South Asian nation was looking back on 5 straight record wheat harvests. However, high heat that decreased wheat production and the highest inflation in 8 years led to a change in policy for the nation of 1.4 billion people. One government official who asked not to be identified said Modi's office ordered a stop to wheat exports because of high inflation. Inflation was in part what caused the toppling of the Congress Party government in 2014. India is one of at least 19 countries that have introduced food export restrictions since the war in Ukraine began. Violent protests have started in some developing nations as international trade in several agricultural products decreases. Countries including India, Indonesia, Argentina, and Serbia have imposed restrictions. Economic damage caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, extreme weather, and supply chain problems have threatened many places with hunger. The United Nations World Food Program, or WFP, said in April that the number of people facing severe food insecurity had doubled since 2019. The WFP estimates that 276 million people in the 81 countries in which it operates are at risk. Now, as exports from 2 major agricultural producers are affected, the WFP predicts that number will increase by at least 33 million. World Trade Organization members can ban or restrict exports on food or other products if the move is temporary and is needed to relieve critical shortages. India's Commerce Minister Piyush Goyal told Reuters last month that he had been in contact with the WTO and the International Monetary Fund, or IMF. He said India needed to explain that it has to deal with food security, prices, and hoarding. Michele Ruta is an economist with the World Bank Group. He said export restrictions risk worsening the rise in world food prices.
He said restrictions produce a domino effect as a deepening crisis causes other countries to take similar steps. Many economists said the world food crisis is already more severe than the last one in 2008. Simon Evanet is a professor of international trade and economic development at the University of St. Gallen in Switzerland. He said, this time around, that is harder to do, as we do have a supply hit here in both Ukraine and Russia. He said the size of summer harvests in major food producers would help predict how the situation develops in the second half of 2022. Information from the U.S. Department of Agriculture shows that Ukraine and Russia provided 28% of world wheat exports, 15% of corn exports, and 75% of sunflower oil exports in the 2020 to 2021 season. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
English speakers consider short sentences to be childish? A reader sent us a message asking about that very question. In today's Everyday Grammar, we will explore an area of connection between sentence length, writing style, and grammar. Are short sentences childish? The answer is this: it depends. Are the sentences clear? Do the ideas connect to each other? Are there different kinds of words, verbs, nouns, pronouns, and different kinds of sentence structures? If the answer to these questions is yes, then the writing is not childish. The quality of a sentence does not depend on its length. Short sentences can be clear, direct, and powerful. They can also be boring or childish. Long sentences can be interesting, artistic, and intelligent. They can also be confusing and unclear. Ben Blatt is a writer. In 2017, he wrote a book called Nabokov's Favorite Word is Mauve. In the book, he explores how famous writers use language. Blatt studied the opening lines of many books. Some writers used very short sentences, while others used very long sentences. Toni Morrison, Blatt notes, had a median sentence length of 5 words. In comparison, Jane Austen had a median sentence length of 32 words. Consider these lines from A Clean, Well-Lighted Place by Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway was a famous Nobel Prize-winning writer from the United States.
You do not want music. Certainly you do not want music. Nor can you stand before a bar with dignity, although that is all that is provided for these hours. What did he fear? It was not a fear or dread. It was a nothing that he knew too well. It was all a nothing, and a man was a nothing too.
These lines have 62 words and 7 sentences. On average, there are just under 9 words per sentence. Some English writing guides suggest sentences of around 15 words are likely to be understood. Sentences beyond 25 words risk becoming difficult to understand. This is because longer sentences usually have more clauses, subject and predicate groups. The greater the number of clauses, the greater the risk the sentence loses clarity. Yet it is useful to write sentences with more than one clause. Such sentences create variety, and variety, as the expression goes, is the spice of life. One useful way to keep clauses separate and clear is by joining them with a semicolon. But first, consider the independent clause. An independent clause can stand on its own as a sentence ending with a period. For example,
Tom likes salad.
The independent clause has a subject and a predicate. The subject is Tom, and the predicate is like salad. You can combine two or more independent clauses that carry similar ideas. You can separate them with a semicolon. A semicolon can be used to form a compound sentence. For example,
Tom likes salad. Betty likes pizza.
These two short statements, three words each, can be put together to make the following sentence that has six words.
Tom likes salad. Betty likes pizza.
More information can be added to one of the clauses to make longer statements.
Tom likes salad. Betty likes pizza, but she hates vegetables.
Or,
Tom likes salad, but doesn't like tomatoes. Betty likes pizza.
These sentences have 10 and 11 words, respectively. Compound sentences can also be used to describe actions, as in,
the shark came close to the boat. The passengers yelled and took pictures.
Three clauses could be combined along with a connector, a conjunctive adverb such as however, unfortunately, or therefore. Such a sentence might go like this.
Tom likes salad. Betty likes pizza. Unfortunately, Joe refuses to eat vegetables.
Note that this example combines three clauses, yet only has 12 words. The central idea of this report is that sentence length and sentence quality are not the same thing. As a very general suggestion, try to keep sentences around 15 words on average. Try to minimize the number of clauses per sentence. If possible, include sentence variety. If you want to write sentences with several clauses, experiment with the semicolon idea. It is a useful way to create sentence variety and still keep thoughts clear and separate. For those of you reading online, we will end our program with a question. We used a complex version of the semicolon structure two times earlier in this report. Can you find these sentences? How are they similar or different from what you learned about in today's report? Write to us in the comments section of our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm John Russell.
Today, on our National Parks journey, we travel to Utah. The Western state is home to several of the most popular national parks in America. Today, we travel to the eastern part of the state. We visit a park filled with strange and beautiful colored rock formations. These formations have been created over millions of years. They curve and narrow and balance on top of one another. Some are extremely thin. Others have huge cracks, yet remain standing. Many of the rock formations seem to ignore the rules of gravity. Welcome to Arches National Park.
Arches are formations
that look like half a circle standing up. Sometimes they create a curved bridge between two large rocks. Arches National Park contains the most natural rock arches of any place on Earth. The smallest arches are less than a meter across. The largest, called Landscape Arch, measures 93 meters from one base of the arch to the other. Water and ice, extreme temperatures, and many layers of salt underground created these rock formations over hundreds of millions of years. The huge amount of salt is the remains of an ancient sea. It covered the area around 300 million years ago. As time passed, the area filled with material left by rivers. Rocks buried the area. This created pressure on the underground salt bed.
Salt, under pressure, moves easily. It is not stable. The thick cover of rock created pressure on the salt. It moved this way and that, making the rock layers above move as well. A soft rock called sandstone moved upwards. It met with other harder rocks. These sandstone structures continued to grow for about 150 million years. Scientists say water is the most important element in creating arches. Water destroys the chemicals that keep rock particles together. The rock breaks as the water freezes and expands. Then the wind blows away the loose rock pieces. Erosion from wind and weather slowly removed layers of younger rock. Most of the layers of rock seen today are pinkish red in color. The rock is called Entrada sandstone. Experts say that most arches seen in the park today developed within the past million years. But the land formations continue to change slowly over time.
But sometimes change happens quickly. In 2008, a formation called Wall Arch suddenly collapsed. Thousands of tons of sandstone crashed to the ground, creating a thunderous noise. It is not easy to predict when arches might collapse. Wall Arch was not as thin as Landscape Arch, for example. Wall Arch also did not have visible cracks. But many tiny breaks within the stone made the arch weaker than others. Some formations within the park look as though the gentlest wind could send huge pieces of rock crashing to the ground. These are called balanced rocks. The most famous of all is simply called balanced rock. This sandstone rock is the size of three school buses. It sits on top of a tower of darker rock called mudstone. The formation is about 39 meters tall. This bottom rock narrows sharply where it connects to the sandstone rock on top. Scientists call this a bridge. Mudstone weathers much more quickly than sandstone. One day, far in the future,
balanced rock will no longer be balanced. Just as wall arch did, balanced rock will collapse.
The names of the rock formations give you information about their appearance or structure. The most famous arch within the park is named Delicate Arch. Delicate means easily broken or damaged, but it can also mean very carefully and beautifully made. Delicate Arch is a huge freestanding arch. It is 19 meters high and 13 meters wide. Humans have called it many different names throughout history. The name Delicate Arch first appeared in a 1934 article. Scientists described it as the most delicately chiseled arch in the entire area. Of the 2,000 stone arches within the park, Delicate Arch has become a symbol of the state of Utah. It is among the most famous geological features in the world. Many of Arch's famous rock formations are easily seen from the single road that goes through the park. But Delicate Arch is not visible from a car. Some visitors choose to walk to two viewpoints. But even from the viewpoints, Delicate Arch is still more than a kilometer away. Many visitors choose to hike up to see the famous arch. The trail is 5 kilometers. It is the most popular hike in the park. The walk is difficult and steep. It offers no shade. The sun is extremely strong. In summer months, the temperature can rise to 40 degrees Celsius. Park officials tell hikers to take at least 2 liters of water with them. In winter months, ice and water can make the sandstone trail extremely slick.
Along the way, hikers pass a wall of ancient animal drawings created by the Ute Indians. These are called petroglyphs. Petroglyphs exist throughout the park. They are a reminder of the long human history in this harsh environment. Before reaching Delicate Arch, hikers must walk on a long and narrow rock ledge. The trail is often crowded with people, but most say the heat and crowds are worth it. Delicate Arch stands alone above a natural sandstone bowl. It rises up dramatically from the flat land that surrounds it. On one side of the arch, the sandstone gently twists. On the other, a severe crack cuts through the narrowing rock. Those who hike to its base appreciate and understand why it was once described as delicate. Most visitors to Arches National Park would agree that there is no other place quite like it in the world. It is quiet and dreamlike, unpredictable and violent, old yet ever-changing. A trip to Arches is like visiting another world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.